Are you sitting comfortably? Then we'll begin.
Listen with other, because grown-ups need story time too. Tomorrow Never Knows by Giles Booth. Episode 5, Many Happy Returns. My 15th birthday was just a few days away. I decided to completely ignore it. I was back at school, but now nobody was talking to me, not even Roland or Peggy. Miss Hemphrey sat me on my own in the far back left corner of the classroom, I think so she could try and pretend I didn't exist. She gave me my work in silence, marked it each evening, and gave it back to me the following day, also in silence. I was now the silent one. After school, Roland was met by his mother and Peggy by her dad and escorted straight home. Nobody escorted me anywhere, but there was usually a jeep hanging around outside with AP guards in it. So I just went back to the castle and sat in my room and either read or stared out of the window at the sea. I might as well have been in prison. The day before my birthday, Grandad surprised me at breakfast by asking what I wanted to do for my big day. I was amazed he remembered. Nothing, I said. You can't do nothing. That's not what your father would want. He never used to do much for my birthday. I think we should have a little tea party at least, said Grandad. What, just you and me? And your two friends? Peggy and Roland. They're not even talking to me. They hate me, the same as everyone else. You've no idea what it's like. I think perhaps they're just scared. Scared of being seen mixing with someone who's an outcast? I think they're embarrassed, Kim. They probably don't know what to say to you. Did I get them in trouble? No, I don't think so, but Roland was trying to help you, am I right? I blushed. I don't want to get anyone in trouble. It doesn't matter. I've spoken to their parents anyway, and it's all squared with HQ. They're coming for tea after school tomorrow. Mrs. Betty is going to put on a spread. I couldn't think of anything worse. Burnt cake. And with Grandad there, we wouldn't be able to talk about what happened. I smiled weakly, finished my toast and went outside to go to school. A jeep with two AP guards was outside with its engine running. Are you here to give me a lift? I yelled. They sped off. The message was clear. They were still watching me. My birthday tea actually went better than I could have hoped. We had it in the blue dining room under the ship. Roland's mum, Mrs. Betty, had, it seemed, taken pity on me, and the table was covered in sandwiches, fish paste and ham and a large bowl of jelly. Roland and I had helped her bring it all up from the kitchen. I was a bit disappointed there was no birthday cake, but when Peggy arrived, I saw why. She was carrying a cake tin. Inside was a sponge filled with cream and strawberry jam. I squealed with delight and hugged her. My dad made it, she said. He's actually a really good cook when he's not got a strop on. Your granddad got all the ingredients for us off ration. He said he enjoyed making it. Things got even better when Grandad finished his cup of tea and slice of cake and said he had things to do and left us alone in the dining room. There was a bit of an awkward pause just after he left, then we all spoke at once. Okay, okay, I cried. I'm so sorry about the tides, blurted out Roland. Idiot got his calculations wrong, didn't he? Said Peggy. Mind you, even if he'd been right, I still don't think you'd have got across in time. Did you two get in trouble? Not really, said Roland. My dad told me not to have anything to do with you, but he winked at me when he said it. I think he might actually admire your guts, Kim, for trying to escape. Mum said she wanted to stop working for your granddad, but Dad said she had no choice. They had a bit of a row about it, but nobody took it out on me. What about you, Peggy?
Same, really. Dad told me not to mix with you. He comes and gets me every day from school, as you know, but I can tell he thinks it's daft. Anyway, I got you a present.
She passed me a book wrapped in old newspaper. Inside was an old detective novel, one I'd not read before.
It's not much, I know. You've not read it, have you?
No, thank you. It's perfect.
It's set on an island, a bit like this one. It was my dad's. He said he's read it so many times, even he can remember who done it.
Sorry I didn't get you anything, said Roland. I didn't know it was your birthday until yesterday. But I do have one thing to tell you that might be a nice surprise.
What's that? Do you think it's safe to talk in here?
You mean, is there a microphone in that ship hanging over our heads? I asked.
Well, is there?
I doubt it. It's just the dining room.
Could be people listening in to gossip at important dinner parties.
I don't think so. Nobody ever comes in here. We normally eat in the kitchen. This is the first time anyone's used this dining room since I arrived.
Roland lowered his voice. I found a boat.
Peggy silently banged her head on the table.
Where? You know the shed where we used to meet?
I nodded.
There's another shed like it, not far away, round the side of the castle. My dad uses it sometimes. It's where he keeps tools and spares for his outboard motor and whatnot. It's kept locked, but he asked me to get some oil from the shed the other evening when he was working on his bike. Anyway, when I got in there, I decided to have a bit of a poke around, you know, and under a tarpaulin at the back, there was a small boat.
No!
Yeah, a small, flat-bottomed aluminium rowing boat, designed for crossing mudflats like these, I reckon.
What are you thinking?
I'm thinking one night I could row you across to the mainland, and then I could row back and put the boat back in the shed.
How do we get in?
Key's just hanging up in the kitchen, and the boat, it looks like it hardly weighs anything. I bet I can lift it on my own.
Peggy lifted her head up off the table.
The two of you are insane, she said. Either that or love struck.
If Roland was embarrassed by that, I didn't notice. I was eating cake and staring at the model ship above my head, thinking of freedom.
Now, we potentially had a boat. Tides were not such a problem. We just had to avoid getting found out.
Peggy warned us both that if we got caught, neither Roland's parents nor the AP guards would be so forgiving this time. Perhaps, she said, unlike Evelyn Flinders' mum, I'd got off lightly before because I was a child or because my granddad was someone important. Thinking for some mad reason that they might cut me some slack because it was my birthday, Roland and I decided to try that very evening. He said it had been almost low tide when he came to my party, so we should be good for a few hours, and we arranged to meet at the boat hut at midnight. I put on the warmest clothing I could find and packed my satchel with a little bit of money I had, some sandwiches left over from the party wrapped up in greaseproof paper, and a flask of water. I decided to leave my copy of The Railway Children behind, as much as a decoy as anything. I thought Grandad would think I'd not go far without it. I walked stealthily, checking no one was about. No AP guards in jeeps. Perhaps they thought I'd been scared enough. When I got to the boat shed, there was no one there. I tapped on the door. It opened a fraction.
Come in, Roland hissed.
He had a small torch, but even with that, it was so dark it was hard to see. We worked silently, taking the cover off the boat and removing a load of junk that was piled up inside it. Old fishing nets and loads of things that looked a bit like the typewriter machine I'd seen in the locked room in the castle cellar. It took a long time to stack them all up.
What are these? I asked. No idea, some stuff of my dad's, I suppose. Never seen them before I came for the oil the other night. I think these might be computers. Nah, my dad wouldn't touch stuff like that. Probably just things he found on the beach or something.
Doesn't look like the sort of thing you'd find washed up on a beach. Maybe he's looking after it for someone then. Who cares? Come on, let's get the boat out. We carried it out carefully so as not to make too much noise, and Roland shut the door. He agonised for a bit about what to do with the keys before locking the shed and putting them in his pocket. We waited a couple of minutes to check no one was watching and then carried the boat down to the nearest bit of shoreline. There was no moon, and a million stars seemed to shine in the sky. I looked up at the Milky Way and felt giddy.
How will you know which way to go? I asked.
See that red light over there? That's the level crossing. We'll aim for that. I'll row. Get in.
Do you know how to row a boat?
I did it with my dad when I was little, on a boating lake in a park back home. I reckon I can remember.
Will you be okay getting back?
No worries. Look behind us. That big star there, right over the castle. That's Jupiter, that is. I'll use that to guide me, just like the ancient mariners. I got in the boat and he pushed it off into the water, wading out up to his middle before awkwardly getting in. I thought the boat was going to tip over, but he managed it. There was only just enough room for both of us. He started rowing. It was slow progress. He said the tide was stronger than he'd hoped. It wasn't like crossing a boating lake in a park. He was having to fight to keep the level crossing in sight, but he said not to worry. As long as we reached any part of the shore on the mainland, it would be fine. I wasn't so sure he'd be able to get back to the island, but I didn't say anything. I could see we were passing the submerged sticks of the Besomway, ghostly shapes like witches' brooms looming in the dark. I shuddered, remembering the feeling of my feet getting washed over with the water and the panic that set in. Then the hope when I saw Roland's dad and how quickly it was dashed. It felt right, though, that the son was now doing what the father could not. It was when we passed the refuge on the Besomway that the fog came in. I was hardly aware of it at first, but soon realised we could no longer see anything at all.
Bugger, said Roland.
What do we do?
I don't know. If we do nothing, we might get swept out to sea, so I'm going to keep rowing.
The temperature plummeted, and I wrapped my arms around myself to try to keep warm. I'm still not exactly sure what happened next. It was as if we were suspended between reality and a dream, between life and death. I remember Roland rowing and rowing for what seemed like hours. It was so dark I couldn't see my watch. I think eventually we must both have fallen asleep. And I had another dream. I was in the bookshop this time, sorting out new stock, but Roland and Peggy were there with me, and we were laughing and joking about something rude in one of the books. My father came in and pretended to be angry with us. I was woken by a sheep licking my face. It was daylight. It was freezing cold and the sky was grey. Roland was curled up asleep next to me in the boat. We were washed up on a beach, back on the island. Tomorrow Never Knows was written, read and mixed by Giles Booth. Original music is by Lee Sperry. Join me next time for the final episode when Kim makes a discovery about her family. Listen With Other is a GSB Radio Enterprises production.